As a listener of this podcast, you know the devastating impact of narcissistic abuse, how it shatters your confidence, leaving you struggling in future relationships. But it doesn't need to be that way. Join me and experts Lisa Sunny and Rosanna Fay at the Strong and Unstoppable Retreat this October in beautiful Orlando, Florida. During this transformative four-day experience, you'll uncover the unconscious psychological blocks holding your recovery back. Through equine therapy, targeted workshops, and practical skill development, you'll uncover and overcome unconscious obstacles and reconnect with your inner strength. This retreat is specifically designed for women who are committed to their healing and ready to break free from the lingering effects of narcissistic abuse. Space is limited and spots are filling up, so don't miss this opportunity to invest in yourself and your future. Secure your spot by visiting wellnessrecoveryretreats.com. That's wellnessrecoveryretreats. Take your first step towards becoming strong and unstoppable today. There is nothing more painful than to have someone abruptly cut off the conversation with the silent treatment. Yet victims often get accused of doing stonewalling when they're really just emotionally detaching. In this episode, Lisa and I tackle this difference between emotional disengagement for survival's sake versus stonewalling. This is Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse, and I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience. Each week, we're going to take a deep dive into the dynamics of narcissistic abuse. As a listener-supported podcast, thank you for considering becoming a subscriber for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. One of the things that about destroyed me, Lisa, when I was in the toxic relationship, and I had heard of it. You can't, as a psychologist, not hear people complaining about this in their relationships, but it wasn't something that Brad and I did. It just wasn't a common ploy or manipulation, but it's stonewalling. But not just stonewalling, it's the emotional withdrawal, the deliberate removal of yourself, or by using silences, maybe it's just withholding affection, withholding sex, in order to send a message to your partner. It could be a form of teaching them a lesson. It might be actual outright punishment. It might even be a reward consequence, like you're training them by withholding attention so that they behave differently. I found it devastating when somebody used emotional love and attention as a form of a consequence.
Me too. Sometimes I would hope for stonewalling, if that made sense. I would hope because he was mouthy. It was a constant argument, constant battle. So I sort of prayed for the peace. However, the emotional withdrawal for me was so intense. Like there was no emotional connection anymore. And there was obviously still an expectation that despite that withdrawal in every way, like just abandoning the relationship emotionally, that I still give in the relationship from a domestic labor standpoint, from sex, all of it. And it felt so unfair. I had never felt such an extreme difference in what I give versus what I get. Because you want general reciprocity, but it went from, this doesn't feel balanced, to this is absolutely off balance. What am I doing here? Why am I in this?
It's interesting. It was introduced in my relationship with my ex like a light switch. He had never done it before. And then he introduced it literally on the honeymoon. That was the first time I'd ever experienced it. I knew what it was too. Actually, and I know I shared the story already before when we were talking about honeymoon disasters, how he dropped me off at the hotel on our, I think it was our first night in, or maybe our second night in. And we already had not a good first night. So our second night in, he drops me off and he says, I'll be back. I'm going to go see a musical and I'm sure you don't want to see it. And as he closed the door, he didn't even let me get a word in edgeway. As he's closing the door, I thought, this is because I confronted him about his use of pornography on our honeymoon night, and he's punishing me for this. He's getting me back. Mm-hmm. And it became a regular feature of our relationship that he would do that whenever. In fact, he even timed it. He often would bring up things at bedtime. And I think partly because he knew sleep was really, really important to me. But I also think, well, he wanted to go up and do something else. I think it was a great way for him to say, I'm mad at you. I'm out of here. So now I have an excuse to be tomcatting around. But I also think it was his way. He was a very kind of a cold, passive person in his aggression. So yes, he could be hot, but he would more likely ran cold. So it was his passive aggressive way of getting back to me. I'll have to tell you, I used to think that sounded not that bad.
until I experienced it. And then I found it devastating. I almost found it to be worse than the hot-headed, calling you names, being intense, the in-your-face anger. Mm-hmm. You know, it was because it was, you can't fight against it. Mm-hmm. Like there's nowhere to go. They're gone. For him, he literally left the space. So what do you do? The conversation abruptly ends. That's what he would do. He would just decide, I'm out of here. I can't talk about this. And then split. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you can't ever go back to it because in their minds, it's over.
You're bringing up old stuff. How dare you?
Well, yeah.
It's over. It's old news. Like, you're like, it was yesterday. Yeah.
Right. Last night. It's over.
The thing, you know, that it renders you so insignificant in that moment, right? Your feelings don't even matter. You can't get a word in. It's your opinion is irrelevant. It's just completely shut down. That level of disconnect in such an abrupt way, it's so shocking to the system that you're like, okay, so I don't get to have a thought or say how I feel. It's a way to minimize what they've done and just shut it down completely. And I know it's all this, you know, tactic to just not take accountability, but you know that when you're on the other side, when you're in it, when you're facing it, experiencing it, it is just so isolating. You feel so alone in the relationship.
It is a form of annihilation. It says, my opinion, my point of view is so paramount, all that matters, that I get to not only dictate if and when I'm in this conversation, but I get to dictate at what point I pull out. And I also get to dictate the fact that you don't get a voice. Mm-hmm. It literally silences you. It makes you, it's like they turn the sound off. Mm-hmm. You know, when your kids, I don't know if your kids do this, but mine did this where they'd cover their eyes and stick fingers in the ears and do la, 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 la. So I can't hear you. It is an adult form of that. And I always found that maddening when someone did that to me as a child. It's maddening when someone does that to me as an adult.
One of my things that I've unpacked from my own childhood is this feeling of being unheard. And that was such a weapon. And I knew that about myself, maybe not quite in those words, but I knew that I had this issue with, I just want to say my piece. I don't need to scream. Mm-hmm. I don't need to call names. I just need to say how I feel so that you can hear me and I would happily hear you. Let's talk about this. But it became like, I'm going to say what I'm going to say and then hang up. And in my situation, he had to work. So it was always this like, well, I have to work. My job is more important. What do you expect me to just talk to you in the middle of work? Like, well, we could talk later. Why do you always want to bring up stuff when things are good? To just every opportunity, right? You're in a no-win situation of just being shut down all the time. It was such a trigger for me. I couldn't say how I felt ever.
It is a powerful consequence. I'm thinking of John and Julie Gottman's work on emotional bids. And this was what blew my mind. I knew how upset it made me feel, but I felt validated, even vindicated maybe when I came across their research on emotional bids. So they define emotional bid as anything, literally. Like it could be just simply you look at me and I know that you're looking for a gaze back and I meet your eyes. That's an emotional bid. But you tell a joke, you obviously want somebody to listen. If you read something aloud, you're hoping somebody's also listening to that. It could be, hey, you're in the mood tonight and you're hoping for them to meet you in the bedroom later. But it's a request for someone to enter into a relational dynamic with you. And they found, this was what I thought was mind-blowing, that when they looked at couples that didn't make it, the failed marriages, the emotional bid wasn't just rejected. It was also ignored. So ignoring or rejecting an emotional bid. So when you know somebody's looking for something from you and you literally pretend you didn't see it or you maybe you just, you know, move on or you whatever you do that forms of ignoring or you outright say, no, I'm not interested, that the marriages that failed, they did that 70% of the time.
Oh, wow.
They ignored or dismissed a bid. But marriages that were successful, that were happy, reported happiness, responded to emotional bids 80% of the time. When I heard that, like, no wonder that felt so upsetting to me. You and I had a chat experience in which I was in a group that I might say something and then it was like the sea just passed on by me and no one responded. And I know that drove me nuts. And I'm realizing the reason it drove me nuts is because I'm really sensitive to that, to being ignored. And that for me, that felt like a bid that was ignored. Mm-hmm. Even though nobody was rejecting me, it just felt like a bid that was ignored. Actually, there's two different directions we can head in it. Let's talk first about the dark side of emotional withdrawal and also why sometimes it may be a survival tactic. Because you and I both know that at the end of our relationships, we probably started emotionally withdrawing And even people have said that's why they hate gray rocking is because they see it as a form of abuse. So let's kind of like talk about that. What's the difference between gray rock or yellow rock or any of those other, you know, kind of BIFs, those brief, informative, factual communication styles and stonewalling or punishment through silence? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think honestly, a good place to start that is when you look at the intent versus the impact. But where that gets really tricky, in my view, is that you can't see intent. So you will know yourself, you will know your own intent, but the impact is left up to the other person to communicate to you. So an abuser intends to cause harm. They intend to withdraw. They intend to make you feel small, to isolate you. When we withdraw, it's a result of being abused, result of being in pain, and we're trying to kind of survive. But how can you tell the difference? Because an abuser will say, you're withdrawing, you're hurting me. So then how much does intent really matter when the impact is that they feel hurt by it? I would argue they're not that hurt by it. And if they are, it's the lack of attention and validation from you, not a lack of true connection, because I don't think that's necessarily what they're seeking, right? They're not getting as much control when you withdraw. That's the root of that problem, in my view.
And I want to even jump in on that, because I also think they like to complain when they don't get us to rise to the occasion.
Yes.
When they can't bait us. I hear when people are on the more toxic end of things complain about this because they can't get their partner to engage in the circular arguments that they used to, that they deliberately will bait them. And then the other person has gotten wise enough not to fall prey to that, just sidesteps the whole thing. And they'll say, well, what's wrong with you? Why? Where did you go? What? Or even how many times have you had the text message and you know it's a toxic, like when you're dating or even maybe it's a toxic coworker or a toxic friend and you don't respond because you know it's not really a, there's really nothing to say. It's not a good response. And they'll say, oh, did you disappear on me? I mean, see, they'll deliberately do this effort to, yeah, they're trying to hook you. And then if you don't get hooked, they're like, well, be like that. They're acting like they're offended because they can't get you into this nasty conversation with them.
Yeah.
I know that gets hard because this is where the sensitive people with a conscience who really want to get along with everybody, like me, I don't like that. I don't like somebody feeling like they're being injured by my withdrawal. But I also know that it wasn't for right intentions. What they're intending is manipulative. What they're intending is to be exploitive. And I don't want to be exploited.
Me neither. There's no positive intention. And when you can see that, I know that when we're in it, there's a lot of doubt and you're sort of, I think I see it, but I'm not sure. But ultimately, all you can do is control yourself. I always tell people just focus on you. If you're being accused of stonewalling, really think to yourself, you know, am I stonewalling or am I not allowing myself to be baited into an argument? So if you feel pretty sure, at least, that you are just not wanting to be baited, you're realizing this is a boundary of mine. You're calling me names and I do not want to participate in a conversation where I'm being called names. So you are not stonewalling because you are willing to talk. You're not willing to talk in these circumstances because there's abuse happening, name calling or shouting or throwing things. So stonewalling is an intentional, relatively intentional behavior that's really designed to hurt the other person. Are you trying to hurt the other person or are you trying to protect yourself? These are the kind of questions you can ask yourself.
Abusers, though, would say, I'm protecting myself by not engaging in this ridiculous argument. That's what they would say. But I also know, though, if you asked them or followed up, you'd find out that they stop all communications. They move into a cold silence around. I mean, I had a friend that when her and her husband got into a fight, he wouldn't speak to her for days. Mm-hmm. I mean, days this went on. How more readily to drive in a point of I'm right, you're wrong, or I don't approve of you, or don't ever do that again by literally cutting somebody out for days.
Days is
that to me too long. I don't know. Yeah, but that's obviously, if you can say, well, I'm just not engaging in that kind of argument anymore. Yeah, but you don't stop talking to somebody for days over that.
But that's the proof.
You just stop talking to the, I know, exactly. You stop talking about the issue, not the stop talking to the person.
Right.
So I think that to me is one of the big tests of that is that.
But that connects to the gray rocking that you were asking about, because gray rocking is not complete silence. I don't advocate for gray rocking. I think it's a terrible idea generally, but especially if you're in family court. But gray rocking is cold, one word answers. Yes, no. You know, like what time is dinner? 7. It's you just, you know, can we change the time we pick up the kids, yes or no? And yellow rocking is really the same, but like, no, thank you, instead of no. If you just learn kind of how to communicate, when to communicate, and you start to trust yourself and trust your intent more and really build a sense of self and start realizing what's a boundary and what's self-preservation, it is complicated. When you're in it, it is very challenging to kind of figure it out, because the abuser will always use your words against you, right? You say you're protecting yourself. No, I'm protecting myself. And you're going in circles. Yes. But that's the time to withdraw.
It is hard. I don't see gray rock or yellow rock that cold. I see it as simply just not engaging in the baiting. That's what I see it. So when someone says, who didn't take the garbage out? You can say, I don't know. Because you actually don't. I'm assuming you don't know. But you also know this is a wind up for a bigger argument, and you're not interested in engaging in it. You're also not wanting to maybe throw somebody else under the bus for it. So you just simply, I don't know. And then you end the conversation. But you're right. It is easy for us who are angry, who feel like we've had it. You know, I remember near the end, I started copying my ex's behaviors as a way to sort of give him his taste of his own medicine. When we start to do that, to me, I recognize I'm crossing a line. That now my intent is becoming darker. It's not simply preservation. I want to injure, because I feel very injured. But I do think it's important for us to understand our communication and to, yes, preserve ourselves, definitely. And sometimes that means just not getting involved in arguments we know that there are no wins. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no win. Or it's deliberately to set you up to make you look bad. Or to make you insecure. That was the one that I had that happened a lot to me, is that he would throw things out to me like, we know how much you love to pack, how much you take on those trips. Now, guys, I'm not an overpacker. Yeah, I like to take a lot of things, but usually I'm the one taking all the electronics. That takes a lot of space, but I'm not taking lots of clothes or lots of shoes. But he liked to imply somehow I was one of those divas that was very difficult to travel with. I just knew that was what he was trying to do. And I like, And then we just move on. It's like, whatever, I'm not defending myself on this.
But that's a clear, to me, on the outside of it, you know, it's clear that you were just trying to maintain some level of peace. But that's so difficult. They claim it, you know, it's hard when the abuser kind of mimics you. But when they withdraw, I know for me, it hurt so badly. It made me feel unseen and unheard, right? This huge withdrawal. You feel like you don't matter and kind of abandoned and lonely and unworthy. And again, that's all the point of it. We feel even more dependent. So sometimes when they withdraw, we start to chase. You even see that in the post separation dynamic, where maybe he goes no contact or she goes no contact with you. Then what, right? You might find yourself in a position where you're chasing them. If you're trauma bonded, if you just feel that kind of intense emotional attachment, it's painful.
Oh, it is. In fact, those are the times that I became reactive. Of course, it wasn't reactive abuse because I didn't abuse it, because it wasn't in the house to abuse. But I would actually, and I don't know why I did it where I did it, but I would go into the shower and scream.
I used to go in and cry.
I would just hunch down and scream at the top of my voice, realizing you will soon see, because you're going to get to visit the condo where I lived, but you'll see that it's a concrete building where the plumbing actually is an open space between everybody. I'm sure the whole place heard me screaming.
That was my next question.
which made me feel really awkward that I got down like, oh, now everybody knows I'm screaming and I feel really stupid for
that. Could have been anybody screaming.
But yeah, but I just felt like at the end of myself, it really took me to the end of myself. Mm-hmm. So that's a great segue. Let's move into talking about what to do if that's a tactic your partner or somebody that you love is regularly using as a way to control you.
Oh, it's so hard to know what to do. You know, I know that I used to pretend it didn't bother me. And I don't know if that's advice or just what I used to do, but I would pretend that it didn't bother me. I used to pretend that we weren't disconnected, meaning I wouldn't like ignore him back. I would be like, what do you feel like having for dinner? Or I would try to re-engage in a way that wasn't about the issue. Now, in hindsight, was I playing into exactly what he wanted? Of course, because what he wanted was not silence. He wanted the issue to go away. So I would seek reconnection by just saying, okay, fine, that's dead issue. We won't talk about it anymore. Of course, you always try to bring it up at some point. And then you're, once again, like we said, bringing up old stuff. But I would seek that reconnection. So I was a great victim. I was very compliant. I did exactly what I knew that he wanted me to do subconsciously. I don't think I was planning out my compliance, but I just knew that this could go on. I knew that he would win at who can stonewall the other one longer. He would win.
But I also want to say, I think in a way that was extremely smart, because if you have somebody who's more on the sadistic end, a little more sociopathic, psychopathic, they want to know that they're harming you. They want to see the victim, the pleading, the crying, the how long are you going to do it? All of that. They want to see a reaction out of you, but you not giving an emotional reaction and acting like it's just another day. You weren't giving him that kind of gratification. So I think it does help to know the person you're in a relationship with and whether or not they're deriving pleasure from your degradation. If you don't give it to them, then it's like if you're the mouse, it just sort of acts dead and bored. The cat who's just into playing and not really looking to eat is going to give up and move away. Mm-hmm. But because that's what predators do. They just want to play with you. But I do think that you're right, that for some is they want just to say the topic's off the board and you cleared it by you pretending the topic no longer exists. That can be frustrating. Mine was sadistic. He wanted to know it hurt. So me doing that was smart. Maybe for you doing it, it might be going along with him. I don't know. Depends on the circumstances.
I know. I mean, he was a little bit sadistic, but not like I wouldn't use that word generally to describe him. But
yeah, no, mine was cruel. I think the other thing is, and I know this is the advice that we say a lot, but I also know I want to talk about the hard part about it, is to see this as a period of peace and take advantage of it and sort of allow yourself to rest in that. Now, here's why I find that super hard. If your sense of self is wrapped up in their opinion of you, you're going to feel like it's emptiness. Yeah. You're going to feel like they have annihilated you. So you claiming that as peacefulness isn't very easy or possible to do. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to begin to recognize if that's happening and that that's an indication that you're allowing this person to have a lot of say over who you are and your value as a person. Mm-hmm. It's a good tip off to that. Mm-hmm.
I know that his intention was to make me feel insignificant and worthless, especially now in hindsight. I know that he was trying to make me feel small, and I'll admit it worked for a period of time. But in getting out of it, it's about reclaiming that and realizing that if he says you are worthless, whether it's directly or indirectly through his actions like this, that doesn't say anything about you, right? It's one person's opinion. And I know when you're in it, again, it's the person that matters the most to you in the world that's saying it. But other people's opinions of you does not need to be your opinion of you. Do you feel that you are worthy? And sometimes if you just want to be heard, I mean, this is why it's great to have a support system around you, because maybe you can tell your best friend or your mom or your therapist even about what happened and get some validation and feel heard, if not from your partner. And again, sharing it with other people can also kind of help you start to see the tactic more clearly. When I started talking about things like this and telling stories, it started to come to me that, oh, that's called stonewalling. I'd never really made the connection. I was like, oh, like I know what stonewalling is, but I didn't realize I was experiencing it. Now it's a withdrawal tactic. And this is something that abusers do because I'm in an abusive relationship. And it starts to click.
And I hadn't realized how much I was wrapped up in his idea of me, in his perception of me, that myself rested on his acceptance of me, and that when he withdrew it, it was really hurting me so bad. So it gave me an ability to see, woo, I created a dependency. My identity is dependent on his approval, and I need to start taking it back. In fact, there was a pivotal moment when he did something absolutely crushing to me. It's in the book, but I don't really tell you what's happening in the book. I don't really go into great detail and love you more, but He had a birthday coming up, and he claimed that nobody ever showed him a really great time for his birthday. And so I decided we would take a trip, a little trip away. We'd stay on an island. We would, you know, do some fun things together. And I'd thrown out some great places to stay. And he said no to all of them. He didn't like all of them. In fact, he sabotaged a reservation. So I even went out and bought all the special stuff to make his favorite cake and had all of that stuff in the house. Then he says to me, just as he's going into that period of time for his birthday, I need to have a retreat away just for myself. So I'm going to leave for the weekend, and I'm going to think about this marriage and decide when I come back whether or not I want to stay in this relationship.
Ooh.
And this is going into his birthday weekend.
As you're making a cake.
Yes, I have all the stuff to make his favorite cheesecake. So what I did was, that night, I contacted a friend and said, hey, I'm flying in today. Can I stay at your house for a while? She goes, sure, absolutely. I knew I had an open invitation. So I woke him up that morning and said, I need to leave right now. I have a flight in a few hours. I'm heading out.
Wow.
But that was my...
You must have shocked
that
him.
That was my first... He didn't say a word to me all the way there. He was absolutely silent. I'm giving you your weekend away. You can think about whether or not you want us to be together, but I'm leaving and I don't know how long I'm going to be gone, but I'm going to go to a friend's house. So, but that was my first, I think that was really my first big step out to say, you don't get to define me and you don't get to hurt me this way. I'm going to take this power back. So it doesn't have to look that big, but I do think if we start to recognize the degree that we're depending on their approval for our self-worth, then we can take steps to start to take it back. Maybe small ways, doesn't have to be this big way. It could be just simply, you don't care if they have dinner that night because they may not come home in time. So you don't try to keep it warm. You know, you take back some of the things that we do that we sort of say, I still need you. Do you still love me? We just stop doing that.
I stopped making him dinner, actually.
Did you?
I absolutely did stop making him dinner. We worked different hours. So he wasn't available for dinners and I would make myself mm-hmm. dinner or make myself and the kids dinner and I wouldn't make him anything. And he would always be like, yeah, I don't understand why you don't just leave me a plate. You don't understand. I think it's clear.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even think of you. I don't put you on my radar because you don't put me on your radar. And it wasn't retaliatory.
Exactly.
It wasn't so conscious, like, because you don't, I'm not going to, but you disconnected. And therefore a natural result of this is that I disconnected. So I feel like he withdrew. Yeah. And I disconnected, you know what I mean? I didn't choose to withdraw as much as it just became a natural consequence of the emotional distress that I felt every time I sought this connection and was just rejected.
So maybe that's something the listeners should think about is how are you waiting on this person's attention and affection and approval? How can you protect yourself in a different way or see yourself more so that when this happens, it's less powerful? And it certainly what you're doing is you're taking the tool of control away from them by doing that.
Hmm.
You're not going to stop them from doing it, but it becomes less of a power tool to be used against mm-hmm. you.
You have the power to assert yourself in that way and meet your own needs. So what do you
exactly.
need and how can you meet that yourself? Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, that's a wrap for this week's episode. Are you following me on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Find me at Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And whether you're in, consider leaving, or have left a narcissistic relationship, find community support at my Toxic Free Relationship Club. You can learn about this resource as well as others at CarrieMcAvoyPhD.com. And I'll see you back here next week.